Good Sunday morning. You're listening to Hashtag Everyone, talking about Hashtag Everything, WGM News Talk 105.1 FM with co-host Keely Reger, Kate Doherty. And you know, we liked him so much last week, we brought him back this week. We have John Effinger again with Missouri Assistive Technology, and we're so excited to have you on again, John. How you doing?
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
Okay, so we're going to start right off, and today we're going to talk about language, why it matters, why it doesn't matter, and it might get a little controversial. When my son, Elliot, was born, this is personal for me too, we said he has Down syndrome. Down syndrome does not have Elliot. And so we didn't know anything about this person first language stuff that later on come to find out had been around for, about 20 years. And it's within the community of Down syndrome, it's pretty much recognized as what is the accepted norm of language. However, having said that, there's also another form of language called identity first. And I want to kind of talk about this because I think it's important. And the reason why I think it's important is because I do think language matters. I think in the 1960s, we quit calling a man a boy, and we changed the way we as a people viewed each other. And when it comes to person first versus identity first, I don't know that I have one language style that personally, from my family perspective, I'm totally biased. It's how we identify. However, I think this concept of being respectful about language is something that we really need to talk about. And I think we need to talk about it here in the tri-states, because I don't think here in our wonderful, loving country community, we talk about this enough, and that we truly understand that it's not appropriate to use terms like Downsy, which is one of the terms when Elliot was first born, I heard a lot that I really didn't enjoy, because he's Elliot and he likes to play and he likes to run and he likes to do many things. And for me, he's not he's not defined by his diagnoses. But anyway, you two go in here. John, you've been around a long time.
You know, this is where he is, but he isn't. So in an open conversation about it, and again, I'm only speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for Missouri Assistive Technology. I'm speaking as John Effinger. And I think what happens is, as professionals, we get into this trap that when somebody calls us on the phone and they say immediately, I'm working with a child with autism, or I'm working with a child with Down syndrome. In our brains, we immediately start, you know, kind of thinking through all the things that we've done in the past and have tried, and it helps us sort of kind of close that gap. But in a way, you know, it would be better if somebody didn't even tell me, you know, what the label was, but they just described what the individual could do and could not do.
I so agree with that.
It would be interesting to see, you know, what conclusion I would come to, you know, or if you tell me the label, am I immediately going to be biased about what I'm going to answer? So
it's a tough call. Yeah, it really is. And one of the things, I agree with that. When I was working with in Kansas as a case manager, me and another gal, we would get handed a file to read prior to going out and meeting with the person. Normally, I did not like to read that file before I went out, because I wanted to make my own conclusions on what I thought maybe the process should look like or where we're going with it. Because too many times we get a little tainted on, you know, someone else's views, someone else's opinions on where the issues are. And maybe they just didn't see them on a good day, or maybe it was, you know, there can be so many factors and variables in this. So I agree with that 100%.
Well, I'm about to get burned at the stake because I no longer read the records of someone that I'm about to see.
Right.
I no longer read any history. I don't read any medical history, because a lot of it isn't really germane to what I'm going to do anyway.
Exactly.
I deal with the person as they present themselves.
Yes.
If, however, later on, I stumble on something that's not working, I'll go back and I'll read it.
Yes. Yes.
So there's probably a bunch of professional people listening to this thinking, oh my gosh, that's heresy. That you don't
right? But I'm the exact same way. That's exactly how I functioned. So it's good to hear that I wasn't going solo.
Well, and I think
you are not alone.
Well, no, but I think the other piece of this is, but when you ran into an issue, you go back and then you check the file to go, oh, that's what I'm missing. They have a sensory trigger here. They have a XYZ here. You know, I think the medical files are helpful, but they can get in the way.
They're not all there is. There's so much
well,
more.
Well, it's the idea of, are you going to use that information that you're learning to see the bigger picture during the evaluation? Or are you going to go in and just talk to the individual, interact with the individual at wherever they present themselves? And it's controversial because sometimes if I had read or heard information beforehand, I'd go, oh, that's why they can't touch the keyboard. But generally speaking, if I try something and they can't touch a keyboard, it's pretty obvious they can't do that. Mm-hmm. Didn't need to read the medical history that they can't touch a keyboard. So, you know, part of this is just sort of what do you get from it? Now, I'll say, though, that my clinical training was read every historical
right.
word that was ever written about the person so that I could make a prior judgment before they come into the room.
Absolutely. But, you know, I've even walked in on some cases and said, I haven't read your file because I want to know you from
who are you?
Yeah, I want to know you right now and where we need to go with this. And it's really interesting how people respond to that.
Well, but I also think that people historically, a lot of this, we base it, we all have biases, we all have prejudice, we all have past experience. And kind of winding back into the person first language versus identity first language. And again, it's not that there's a right or a wrong, but I find it very fascinating because within the Down syndrome community, person first language is essentially the acceptable norm. The identity first language is coming, the driving force there has been coming through the autism community and through some other ability related organizations. And I find it fascinating because with a diagnosis of Down syndrome, you wear your diagnosis on your face. You aren't going to meet my child and not know that they have Down syndrome. Whereas with autism, you don't. And very often I'll have, you know, there'll be a young man or a young lady with autism and somebody will say, oh, well, I had no idea. Well, you're right. They don't have the scarlet letter A branded on their forehead,
sure,
for goodness
sure.
sakes. But I find it interesting within the two communities that they have a tendency to gravitate. And
this, Kate, takes us into a new law in Missouri that we can just touch on briefly, where the term dyslexia is an approved identifier to use with kids in schools. And I don't know if we have time right now to kind of go into that, but people are wanting that label. They're not trying to get away from that label. They're asking that label to occur, families and kids. And so the controversy is, well, why do you want that label? Why do we want to start labeling more kids? Because it helps those individuals understand how they are different. Mm. I'm not speaking on their behalf. I'm just telling you what I hear when I go to meetings.
Sure.
So it is a controversy.
Well, you know, but the only issue that I see with kind of the dyslexia, not the only issue, but one of the issues, and we're going to have to take a break here, is simply the fact that when it comes to reading, which is, you know, we want every child to read in whatever ability they can. Dyslexia is such a small percentage of all the different reading issues that are out there. But let's talk about that a little bit more briefly. We'll just touch on it when we come back, because right now you've been listening to hashtag everyone talking about hashtag everything. And that's for sure today. We started with person first language and identity first language. And now we're headed towards dyslexia. But it all wraps up in one rabbit hole. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in a little bit. You're listening to hashtag everyone talking about hashtag everything.
When severe weather threatens, you want to stay ahead of the storm. Turn to WGEM Chief Meteorologist Mike Cole.
This is for northwestern sections of Lee County, Iowa. Take shelter right now.
Approved by the American Meteorological Society. Leading a team of meteorologists, tracking storms with the most advanced technology. And the WGEM News Team, nationally recognized for excellence in storm coverage. It's the team you can trust. WGEM Storm Track Weather.
I learn, I speak, I care. Hashtag every child. Down country, because every child is a gift. every child can learn, and every child learns differently. Up at downcountry.com. Up at downcountry.com or call 217-617-3568. 217-617-3568 or visit Downcountry on Facebook or Twitter. Hashtag every child.
Branching Out LLC, a premier lawn and landscaping service that can meet all your residential and commercial needs. Regardless of the season, Branching Out offers a service for maintenance-free outside living. Branching Out takes the time to listen to your needs and ensure it's done correctly the first time. If you're not satisfied, Branching Out is not satisfied. To contact Branching Out, call 573-501-0760 or visit them at www.branchingoutllc.com.
Welcome back. You're talking to Hashtag Everyone, talking about Hashtag Everything. I'm Kate Doherty with co-host Keely Rager, and we've got John Effinger on there. And while we were off the air, we were having a really fascinating conversation about respecting how people identify, and also understanding that sometimes there are issues with funding, and some people desperately want these labels. Others, you know, they desperately don't want those labels.
Well, and I think, too, along the lines of the funding stream, we have to have a diagnosis to be able to access the funding. But John, you said something really interesting after we started into that conversation. Can you just kind of repeat for our listeners what we were discussing?
Sure. Now, because I'm old, I don't remember a thing I said.
It was really good, I promise you.
I think what we were talking about is why people want a specific identity and they're comfortable with it.
Yes.
Because I think some identities have a positive connotation and some are negative. And I'll give you a really good example. I was dyslexic as a kid, and when I was in elementary school, I believe every year I was in the Black Crows reading group. Ooh. And that was the reading group where all the kids who were non-readers were grouped in. So we were Black Crows for like 5 years. So
awesome.
We didn't have to use the word dyslexia because we used Black Crows.
Gotcha.
You know, I was the Black Crow kid forever. So now dyslexia gives me the ability to say, well, you know, you may have labeled me a Black Crow kid, but in reality, I had this acquired disability that I got from my mother that took me a little bit longer to learn how to read. So some people will view that as a positive thing that they got that label.
Wow. I'm just sitting here and I'm like, oh, you just, my mind. And I think you're right. I think, and there's so much I would love for our listeners to hear about your story, because I look at the impact
that you're
having.
Hey, John, spell electricity.
Oh, Kate.
No. There's a reason
I
asked
him. That's my kryptonite.
He eventually, so I know a
Kate
little.
Kate went to my training, and I'll tell you that story when you have time, but that is my kryptonite.
No, we have time. Right now, I want to hear the story. I'm putting it out there. It was really fantastic.
You just opened that door
you
where we wanted you to go.
Right. You opened when you went with the Black Crow label.
60s, back in the 60s and 70s, they didn't know what to do with kids who were non-readers. So back then, it was kick the can down the road, and that's why so many adults who came out of that generation were non-readers, because they were never supported in their ability to learn to read. So when I got into junior high, they wanted to decide if I was intelligent or not. So they gave, I think there were like 25 kids in a room, intelligence tests, and determined, oh my gosh, these kids are super bright. They might even be gifted.
Right.
So they had me go to an advanced English writing class. And the very first day I walk in the room, the teacher gives me a chalk in my hand and says, we're practicing writing words on the board. Go write the word electricity. And to this day, I cannot spell electricity. I use an iPad. I use Siri. I use Amazon Alexa to spell words for me when I can't spell. It has nothing to do with my intelligence.
It's right.
I just never learned those rules adequately to compensate. So, you know, I never used the word dyslexia in my entire 60 years of my life till this year.
Yeah. Well, I love that you made the point. It had nothing to do with your intelligence level. But I think that's such a misconception with, okay, they can't spell, so they must not be intelligent. Or they can't read.
Or they can't
well,
write.
And it, And that gets into the notion of least dangerous assumption. You know, we can't base assumptions about anyone's intelligence by any label until you actually start doing stuff with
Absolutely.
People. So the least dangerous assumption is don't paint people in a box, give them the opportunity to learn. But that's the burden on you to teach me. The burden on you is to teach me to learn, not force me to learn.
That's true. That's true. So I'm going to wind. I want to wind back to this person first language versus,
back in, Kate.
Versus identity first language, because I kind of struck me as we're sitting here going a little bit deeper. So for any listener out there who's like, what on earth, they've been talking about this, how people identify and what does that mean? Person first language is always referring to the child first or the adult first before the diagnosis.
The person, yep.
Keely, do you have some examples?
I actually just printed this off because I thought, wow, this is maybe a little cut and dry and clear and helpful. I don't know. People with disabilities is what maybe we should say, right? The other one is instead of the handicapped or disabled.
Well, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand why. And again, if you're out there and you're fine with the term handicap, that's awesome. But just be aware, the root of that comes from back in the day when individuals with disabilities would be on the side of the street with their caps in their hand, and you would toss your money in the caps in their hand because we didn't have any programs for individuals with disabilities. They would be sitting on the side of the street and they'd be begging. That's why some people find the term handicap not acceptable anymore. Some people are fine with it. We watched The Voice a while back, and there was Blind Joe, which would be identity first language. And Blake Shelton actually asked him, he said, are you okay with being called that? Which I love country boys because that's a very polite thing to do. And Blind Joe said, yes. Identity first language. It's how he identified. However, somebody, if they were talking about person first language, would be perfect. Joe, who, you know, my name's Joe, and thank you very much. I also happen to be blind. I think that's a good way. But go on down the list, Keel. There's some others.
The next one, he has a cognitive disability or diagnosis instead of he is mentally retarded.
Oh,
there's the R word.
Sorry.
Yeah, definitely. There's a whole list of these, and you can go out and you can research and you can put some of these things out there. But Kate, I think you had, you said something when Blake Shelton spoke to that person is he asked him. I think that's a big thing. It's just being respectful to talk to someone and just treat them like a person.
Well, and I think not making assumptions.
Absolutely.
One of the things that, if I've ever been with a medical professional or a therapist or someone else, and they refer to all those Downs kids or all those, instead of using proper and appropriate language, I mean, whether it's right or wrong, I do have a tendency to go, oh, wait a second. If you're going to label and group my child as just part of a larger group, then for me, I lose a little bit of a level of respect for you. And I think as a professional, it's important. I think as parents, it's important to understand what we identify with.
So the autism community has a saying that if you've met one kid with autism, you've met one kid with autism. And I'm actually, you know, unfortunately now using that phrase for everybody. Because, if you've met one kid with one thing, you've met one kid with one thing, regardless of what the one thing is. Because I would really love it if somebody came to me and said, oh, this kid has XYZ, and every kid with XYZ was exactly the same.
Oh, my gosh.
Way.
Wouldn't that make your job easy?
Yeah. And so I really think we need to all kind of practice that whole idea. You met one kid with Down syndrome, you met one kid with Down syndrome. So
Absolutely.
It gets away from the labeling and gets more onto the what are they doing? What's the outcome?
Well, and that's exactly. And I'm going to give you a little story here. I was in the grocery store, and it's been a little time back, and I had on my T-shirt as I came back from the National Down Syndrome Conference. And it had Down syndrome on it. Imagine the possibilities, all the good stuff. And I had a lady stop me, and she says, they are the sweetest people. And I said, excuse me? I had no clue what she was talking about because I didn't even realize.
Right.
And she said, they're just always happy.
Ugh.
And, you know, Kate and I had a long discussion about this because, you know, everyone has good days and bad days. Everyone, we are individuals. And so I think that's where we go to. And again, I am kind of like Kate. The identity first is not my way of speaking, but if that is how someone identifies, they need to be comfortable with that. But I say see the person as an individual. And that's kind of where I come from when I'm speaking with people, because that's how I want to be viewed.
Well, do we have time to kind of touch on this further?
We are actually going to touch on it when we come back from this next break. And you're listening to Hashtag Everyone, talking about Hashtag Everything. Hope you all are having a good time listening to us, because we're having a great time with this conversation. And hopefully we're getting people just thinking a little bit more. So anyway, we'll be back in a bit this wonderful Sunday morning.
When severe weather threatens, you want to stay ahead of the storm. Turn to WGEM Chief Meteorologist Mike Cole.
This is for northwestern sections of Lee County, Iowa. Take shelter right now.
Approved by the American Meteorological Society. Leading a team of meteorologists, tracking storms with the most advanced technology. And the WGEM News Team, nationally recognized for excellence in storm coverage. It's the team you can trust. WGEM Storm Track Weather.
I learn, I speak, I care. Hashtag every child. Down country, because every child is a gift. Every child can learn, and every child learns differently. Up at downcountry.com. Up at downcountry.com, or call 217-617-3568, 217-617-3568, or visit Downcountry on Facebook or Twitter, hashtag every child.
Branching Out LLC, a premier lawn and landscaping service that can meet all your residential and commercial needs. Regardless of the season, Branching Out offers a service for maintenance-free outside living. Branching Out takes the time to listen to your needs and ensure it's done correctly the first time. If you're not satisfied, Branching Out is not satisfied. To contact Branching Out, call 573-501-0760 or visit them at www.branchingoutllc.com.
News Talk 105.1 with co-host Keely Reger, Kate Doherty, and our special guest John Effinger. And we have been talking about the way we identify and the assumptions we make. And John, you just said, let's talk about the way this came to be.
Well, I think one of the things that happened, you know, let's just take 4 years ago. And I'm going to circle back to the word dyslexia for a minute. I would get these random phone calls from people who would say, you know, my son has dyslexia, and the school isn't going to do anything about it. And at the time, 4 years ago, nobody really liked that term because it was really difficult to understand what that term meant. So professionally, nobody really used it all that much, but I'd get more and more calls. And eventually, a bunch of parents got together and they went to the Missouri legislature and they passed a law. They passed a law that that label was now acceptable and that schools needed to do something about it. Mm. So the unfortunate thing is that if everybody was doing something about it before these parents felt like they had to go create a law to use an identifier, we wouldn't have that situation.
Ooh, but
absolutely. Unfortunately, in our society, people have to use laws to force everybody else to do what they need to do in the first place.
Well, and it really makes me sad because here's the deal. Good reading instruction, good different reading interventions, all of these different, every child needs, you know, if they have that
right.
possible capability, we want them to read, for goodness sakes. And so it makes me sad that somehow now, well, only if you have this label, you know, are you going to, that's just silly, you know, and I'm, you know, in Missouri, unfortunately, I think to date, it's an unfunded mandate. So while I think it's wonderful that these children are going to begin to get their help, there's so many other kiddos, whether it's because of socioeconomic structure, whether it's because of neurological issues, that are having reading, interferences. And I'm sure some people out there are going to say, well, why aren't you guys talking about any of these different reading programs? And, you know, here's the deal. Good reading instruction is good reading instruction. And the program that works is the one that works for your child and your kid
right.
based on their unique needs. And
yes.
You keep trying.
I just had this conversation with a teacher, and she uses so many different ways to teach her students. She's a friend of mine. I think she's brilliant because she doesn't have one set way she teaches, because she says everyone learns differently. And I love that, because, of course, that's what we think. And, you know, she's making sure that they have different options for how they complete an assignment. And I know that that's a lot of work for an educator. I know that's a lot of work for a parent. I know that's a lot of work for any professional that is putting that time in working with someone. But that's where we've got to go to make sure that we're allowing everyone to have access to the things that they need to learn and to be able to, you know, achieve and be successful in their life and do the things they want to do.
Well, and to put the killer on all of this, we had all of these researchers come to the task force to talk to us about what programs work for kids that are struggling readers. And, you know, they kind of disproved just about every theory that was on the planet and disproved this and disproved that. And there's certain commonalities of things that you can do for best practice. But we finally got around to, well, is there one thing that you can put your finger on that every kid benefits from? And there was this dead pause in the room, and the researcher said, teacher enthusiasm.
Yeah.
So teacher enthusiasm was the one common denominator that regardless of what program you used, kids were impacted by. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a future show, but
I think it's that piece that is huge. Well, and I think it's that piece that gets missed. And again, it kind of actually wraps nicely back around in the whole person first versus identity first. You know, if you have a teacher who believes you can read, you know what I mean, and puts in a lot of different extra time or buys in, I think the teacher enthusiasm and their belief in their students is huge. It doesn't mean that it's a cure-all. I want to be clear. That's not what I'm trying to say here. I'm simply saying that there is this intangible when it comes to how we help people identify. And kind of to wrap it back around, I meet a lot of adults, and it's with different abilities. And it's really interesting because I meet some adults who say, I hate my XYZ. I meet other adults who say, I love having XYZ. It's part of who I am and it's part of my makeup. And so I find it really unique because it kind of winds back into this whole interesting muddy water, because a lot of this has to do with how are things introduced? What's a family's belief system? What's the philosophy within a structure of whatever system they're working within? And I think that becomes really interesting. So, you know, John, I'm interested to see how the dyslexia task force goes in Missouri. I do hope kids get some interventions that they need. I just wish it was available for every child.
And maybe that's a good place to ask, too.
The reality is, kind of is, because they're going to screen every kid. And just because you may not pass the screening doesn't mean you have dyslexia. But the undertow here is that if you're a struggling reader-writer, you're going to pop in the screening. So, you know, maybe the positive thing from this label is if schools aren't doing adequate reading instruction for all kids, when they screen kids and realize, oh my gosh, this kid really isn't a reader, they're going to do something different regardless. My concern here is
I think they're going to have to be very careful that you don't end up with another segregated system because,
because
universal design of learning, you supply the interventions, you know, and differentiate instruction to all children. I would be very careful. I would hate to see a system by which kiddos that are struggling readers suddenly become the black crows again.
I was just thinking that exact same thing.
Well, and Kate, that's a show for another time about the open mindset of educators to view learning for all kids in one environment and not segregating kids based on their learning style. And that's huge because as educators, we're taught how to segregate kids based on their learning style. If they're speech impaired, they get pulled out. If they need occupational services, they get pulled out. If they have a learning disability, they go see a resource teacher who's going to cure them and fix them so that they can come back into the classroom. You know, we still do this, let's segregate kids based on their educational learning style without integrating them into a regular classroom.
You know, it's shocking. Somehow we managed a one-room schoolhouse model for many, many years where we taught kids of all different learning styles, K through 12. Anyway, unfortunately, that is going to have to be another show because this is hashtag everyone talking about hashtag everything. And we hope you had a great Sunday morning. John, we're definitely having you back. And everybody have a blessed Sunday. Life goes on.